You are listening to Inverse Otaski, the Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast. Season 4. Episode 3. Overview.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Wade. This episode features excellent software, Megafont 2 Plus. This was a printer utility, and Excellent Software did an excellent job of describing their software, so I'll just take from the manual. Congratulations on your purchase of Megafont 2 Plus. Megafont 2 Plus is probably one of the most useful programs you will own. Now you can print text files on your printer using redefined character sets, list out programs with special or inverse characters, and last but not least, dump out graphics 7 Plus and 8 screens, including KoalaPad and Atari Touch Tablet, page designer layouts, and typesetter icons. You can also print icons from Rubber Stamp. And you can print source code files if they are in listed, non-tokenized form. Very useful in preserving inverse and special characters in the output. And if your printer supports it, you can upload fonts to it as well. As for the publisher, we talked about this in the last episode, which featured Excellent Software's The First Excellent Word Processor. For more information, listen to that. There's a link in the show notes for it. And you'll find a little bit more about Excellent a little later on.
Technical data.
Megafont 2 Plus was released in 1985 by Excellent Software. It was programmed by Randy Dellinger and Richard Ronley. The program does not require BASIC. It required 48K of memory, though, and sold for $24.95. By 1987, this had dropped to $15. As for today, that $24.95 would be $57.21. And from the 1987 price, it would be a $32.77. The manual is 20 pages cover to cover. It's printed on 5.5-inch by 8.5-inch paper, double-sided. The covers are light blue with dark blue ink. Prominently on the front cover is a cat in a hot air balloon with stars in the background. To the left is an inverse text box printed slightly askew. It says, "Now, touch tablet compatible." To the right of the balloon, at the opposite angle, is a dot matrix printer with what looks like a silhouette of a cat's face. At the top, in small thin lettering, it says the complete Atari program lister and graphics dumper. Beneath that, in giant thin lettering, all uppercase, it says Megafont 2 Plus, with a copyright flushed right underneath. Under that, flushed left, it has the authors. At the bottom, the Excellent Software logo and company address appear flushed left, then a cat with a cane and a suitcase, with a small mouse looking up, and flushed right is the price in large lettering at $24.95. In the bottom right corner, it says Atari 48K. The manual is fairly easy to read and covers all aspects of the program, but only has tutorials for integrating with other applications. There are graphics sprinkled throughout with no screenshots. I'll mention that the font in this version appears to be from a daisy wheel or near-letter quality printer. Previous versions of the manual were printed using fonts from the computer itself. There is one page in the manual that demonstrates four of the included fonts. There is also one page which is an ad for several products including Megafont. The ad was created using another product of Excellent Software, Typesetter. As for the packaging, it was a 6x9 single folding vinyl folder. On the front inner fold is a sleeve which holds the disc, and on the back inner fold is a sleeve which holds the staple-bound manual. Simple packing which undoubtedly helped keep the cost down.
Usage notes.
First of all, you boot without BASIC. During booting, a splash screen will appear. After a few seconds, the printer selection screen will appear. It is in Graphics 1, and the whole screen background has the classic Atari rotating color rainbow. This makes it a little difficult to read, but it certainly makes it stand out. On this printer selection menu are four options. 1. ProWriter /NEC. 2. ProWriter BP. 3. Epson, Panasonic, and Reitman. And 4. Gemini 10 and 10X. This supports the NEC, ProWriter, Epson with GraphTrax RX80 and FX80, Reitman, Mannesmann Tally, Panasonic, Star Gemini 10 and 10X, and other compatibles, as you have no doubtedly figured out by now. One note on the operation is that escape key backs out of any operation, just like it should. The program screens are presented in standard Graphic Zero with varied background and foreground colors. Input selection generally does not require return, except when entering a string such as a file name. For the menu, the top of the screen has a box with the program title, copyright, and authors. Below that are the menu options, of which there are five. There is a title for the list called Options in Inverse Video, and the items are 1. List a text file to the printer, which is selected by pressing 1. When choosing this option, the screen changes here to a medium green. The top has one line title in a box which says Special File Lister. Beneath that are the options with the title of Options again in Inverse Video. There are 8 options here, and each one has a selector in Inverse Video and is followed by the currently selected value. Below the options is an instruction line which reads Enter 1 to 7 to change options, D to download, or P to print, or F for fast print. As you can see, it introduced 3 new options. It also contains a mistake. It says to enter 1 to 7, but there is an option 0 which makes the 8th option, so it should read Enter 0 to 7. Those options are 0, blank screen, selected with 0, and it has a default value of no. When choosing this, it will blank the screen while printing, which can speed up the process just a bit. You're still limited by your printer's print speed, though. Next option is 1 for font, and it has a default value of Atari. This item lets you change the font used for printing by entering a valid font name that's on the disk. The next option is 2, print size, and it has a default value of small. This changes the size of the printed output. Small equates to condensed print, medium is standard size, and large equates to expanded or double wide. The next option is 3 for line spacing, and it has a default value of 1. And this changes the line spacing. The next option is pagination. This is selected with 4, and it has a default value of no, and this controls the page breaks. The next option is 5 for left margin. It has a default value of 0, and this changes the left margin as you might expect. The next one is 6 for right margin, which has a default value of 120, and you guessed it, it changes the right margin. It will also change automatically based on the print size setting. The last option here is 7 for boldface print, and it has a default value of no. This turns on emphasized printing. Some printers may not be able to do double strike graphics, though. The additional option D is used to download a custom font for printers which support it. It will download the font currently selected. You'll be prompted to print a test page after the download. It prints a one-line message with the new font that says, "This is a test of the downloaded font," with downloaded font in uppercase. The additional option P is used to print, and you'll be asked for a file name first, and you can specify either a valid file name on the disk or use E colon to use the keyboard editor. Using the keyboard editor allows you to enter lines of text one at a time and have them printed. So this could be useful for addressing envelopes, for example. And the additional option F is used for fast printing. The difference here is that the standard dot matrix font is used unless the output encounters a special character, in which case it switches to graphics mode to print that character, then resumes in the standard font. Okay, returning back to the main menu with option number 2, which is dump a graphics 7 plus or 8 screen. The screen colors here change to a dark red. The top of the screen has a title and some instruction contained in it. The title is Graphic Dumper, and the next line has the version. The next line after that has C to change spacing in Inverse Video. And the next line has Escape to Abort. And the last line has Return for Mini-DOS. Beneath the title box are the menu options titled with Options in Inverse Video. Then there are 5 options listed with the selection letter in Inverse Video. Beneath that is the instruction, Enter 1-5 to change options, or P to print. And the options are 1. Normal/inverse with inverse and inverse video, of course. This is selected by using number 1, and it's followed by the current selection, which defaults to normal. Option 2 is print size, and this is followed by its current selection. And there are several different sizes here. You have 1/8 of a page, 1/4 of a page, 1/2 of a page, and full page. The third option is left margin, and this is followed by its current selection, which defaults to 0. The fourth option is boldface print, and it's followed by its current selection, which defaults to no. And the last option is picture type, which is selected with 5, and it is followed by the current selection as well, which defaults to m-painter/koala. Other options for this one are page designer top, page designer bottom, page designer full, and typesetter icon. The additional option C, which is listed in the title block, is selected with the letter C. And this lets you change the line spacing, which defaults to 18/216 of an inch. And when you choose P to print, you'll be asked for the file name. The file is loaded, displayed on the screen, and the printing starts. When complete, you are returned to the menu. So main menu option number 3, the Mini DOS. This opens in its own menu with the title at the top in inverse video. The menu items are contained in a box. Below the box is the menu instruction, again in inverse video, which says select letter. There are 6 menu items themselves. Each of their selection letters are in inverse video. Beneath the options, there is a prompt labeled Enter Option 1-5. And those options are 1, Disk Directory. Here you will be prompted for the drive and if you want to send the output to a printer. The directory is displayed in 2 columns, and the file sizes are shown as well as the free space. If you send it to the printer, it will still display on the screen as well. The output on the printer will be in the extra wide format. Option number 2 here is Format Disk. This is selected with F, and you'll be prompted for the drive, and then it will ask for a confirmation. Option number 3 is Erase File, and this is selected with E. And you guessed it, it erases a file on the disk after you enter the name. Option number 4 is Rename File, selected with R, and you'll be prompted for the source file name, and the file will be validated on disk, and then you'll be asked for a new name. Option number 5 is Lock File, and this is selected with L, and option number 6 is Unlock File, selected with a U, and both of these work the same way. Only one locks a file and the other unlocks it. You'll be prompted for the file name, and then the operation is carried out. And the 7th menu option is Exit Mini DOS, which is selected with an X. Returning back to the main menu again, we have option number 4, which is Change Printer, and this takes you back to the printer selection screen. And option number 5, which is End, and this allows you to reboot, exit to DOS, or rerun the program. Now a word about the files on the disk. Behind the scenes, Megafont 2 Plus uses OSS DOS XL version 2.30. There are 18 fonts supplied on the disk, and they have FNT file extensions. You can use your own as well if you'd like. There are 7 picture files supplied on the disk in various formats. There is DOS.sys, which is, of course, DOS. And there's an auto-run sys file, which is the program. And there's rotate.obj. And I believe that's the color rotation code for the printer selection menu.
Fun factoids.
Yeah, there are several fun facts this time. First of all, there was a PC version which was also available, and it was priced at $39.95. This was touted as being a very advanced version. I've never seen it, so I can't attest to it. Next, like many of the other excellent software products, there was an Atari 520ST version available as well. Next, the Saito printers are a notable exception to the compatibility list. It's documented the authors had been in touch with the company, but had not had any positive results. Next up, you could purchase a backup copy from Excellent Software for $5, or $11.46 today, but you must have your serial number. Next, there's a special thanks section in the manual thanking Jennifer Brabson and Mike and Linda Barnes, And I think Jennifer is one of the graphic artists based on credits on the picture of the staff and icon discs that Excellent also sells. There was a trio of picture discs sold for $20, and there were three icon discs which were available for $10 each. And next, on the back of the manual, it has the same caricature depiction of the Excellent staff as I described in the first Excellent word processor episode. And last, the product received an overall rating of A in the 1984 Atari Book of Software.
Summary.
I've used a few dumper programs in the past, though never this one in particular. This one I found to be easier to use than the others, and it has all the options you need for printing everything from source code to high-resolution artwork. I thought this was one of the ones that I had used before, but after starting it up, I clearly realized it wasn't. The output here is clear, and with a wide variety of settings, you can easily find a configuration to meet your printing needs. The screen and picture dump supports, I think, basically every common format. So you can dump screens from Page Designer, Typesetter, MicroPainter, Graphics Master, Koala Pad, Micro Illustrator, Atari Artist, Rubber Stamp, and Computer Eyes, to name just a few. Megafont 2 Plus has the ability to pause printing and resume later. This was apparently put in to accommodate low-cost printers whose print heads could overheat. To be honest, I've never heard of print heads overheating before. 32 years later, I've learned something new and completely irrelevant. There was an interesting use case listed in the manual. If you dump a graphic in the quarter page or smaller sizes, you can adjust the margin, which means you could use them as letterhead. And I'm not sure I would have thought about that at the time. There's another use case that I thought was very useful as well. When printing from the keyboard input, you can design an entire screen before printing. You just need to make sure you don't press return until the display is ready. Once ready, just move to the top of the screen and press return until you reach the bottom. The only problem with the keyboard input is that the left margin is not at 0, but instead at the standard column 2. You can overcome this by arrowing over. I just thought it should be default to the absolute farthest left. And the one thing that I really couldn't test here was the font download feature, so I'm not able to comment on it. Ideally, once the font is downloaded to the printer, it becomes the printer's standard printing font until it's turned off. And there are only two printers listed as compatible, the ProWriter AP with a chip and the ProWriter BP. The manual does include instructions for preparing documents from other programs to be printed using the special file lister feature. Some of those are Atari Writer, which I featured in Season 2, Episode 1, LetterPerfect, which I featured in Season 1, Episode 2, Bank Street Writer, which has yet to be featured, and Excellent's own first Excellent word processor, which I featured in the last episode, or Season 4, Episode 2. Links to those featured are in the show notes. Overall, I thought this was a very good program, and it worked exactly as I needed it to. So what did I like about this? Well, number one, it's easy to use, and it's well put together. And I guess there is no number two, because it's a very simple program, and it works just like I thought it should. As for dislikes, there was really nothing to dislike here. The program performed exactly as I expected it to, like I've just mentioned, and I was able to use it without really referencing the manual. In fact, I read the manual only after creating all of this episode's content. From a 1985 perspective, would I use it? Yes. This program represents a very good value for the money, and it does everything it says it will. And it's easy to use to boot. From a retro perspective, would I use it? Yes, this is my favorite utility of this type so far. It will now be part of my standard tool set, replacing others such as MagnaPrint and FancyWriter. As for a bit rating, as you might have expected, this one easily deserves a bit rating of 8. It's very well put together, has all the options you need and then some, and it's easy to use. Thumbs up all the way on this one.
News.
There are only a couple of bits of news I wanted to keep everybody up to date on. First, I didn't participate in Extra Life this year, so I didn't plead for everyone's contributions like I have in the past. And not that I don't care about the kids, I've just been exhausted lately. Work's been keeping me very busy, as well as other projects that I have going on. So I decided to rest and instead support Rob, or Ferg, from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast. And this year he raised nearly $1,500. I had a fun time watching him play and live chatting on his YouTube stream. And if I do participate in Extra Life next year, it will probably be in a 2x12 style. A number of us have talked about that, and that seems to be something easier to do for those of us that have busy work schedules. So that's probably what I'll be doing in the future. I also recently purchased a Dell 2001 FP monitor and soundbar. I got this hooked up with the 8-bit, and it's now using S-Video. And the picture is simply amazing. I also have my ST hooked up to it through the VGA port, and of course the 7800 and Atari Flashback and ColecoVision Flashbacks hooked up through the composite via switch. And they have equally as good pictures. Well, not equally, but they have good pictures for their platforms. And last, if you follow the Inverse Ataski Facebook page, you have undoubtedly been keen to my renewed interest in this project. I have research complete now through episode 8, and I'm well into episode 9. And I'm enjoying this a little bit more than 1632. And while 1632 is very interesting, I set out maybe with too lofty of a goal, and it's taking longer for those episodes to be produced than I had anticipated. And that will probably continue just based on the volume of content that there is. One thing that I'm finding is that doing the 1632 podcast back-end work is taking away from my rediscovery experience, and I really don't want the podcast to have a negative effect on what I set out to do with rediscovering the ST for personal interest. So those episodes might be a little bit longer in coming, but they're still going to be there. So it just might be more of a actual time frame rather than condensed 3 months into one. So, and that's it for news.
Interview.
Hey, Randy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. First, I want to thank you for taking your time today. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. No problem.
I guess let's start at the beginning, if that's okay.
Sure.
How did you get into Atari computers?
Let's see. Probably way back in 1979. I was probably in ninth grade, and friend of mine got an Apple II, and I'd basically never seen a computer before at that point, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Started, you know, he started showing me how to program, and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. You know, I got to get one of these. So the next year for Christmas, you know, I was bugging my parents to get a computer, and, you know, the Atari 800 had come out by then, and of course it had color and sound and, you know, and games. So I was like, hey, that's what I want to get. So, yeah, I convinced my parents to get me Atari 800, and there you go. I started playing around with it. Thought it was the greatest thing ever.
That's pretty cool. That's my first computer was an Atari 800 as well, and I was fully intent on being a lawyer. I was taking classes like debate and stuff like that, and I got the computer, and that completely changed my life.
Yep, same with me. Did you go into computers then?
Yeah, I'm in IT. Been in IT basically all my life. I've done everything from programming to systems management, which is what I'm doing now. So, you know, like enterprise monitoring, that type of thing.
Yeah, pretty much same with me. That Apple II, you know, that was just such a revelation at the time. I was like, wow, you can type something in and the machine is doing what I'm telling it. I mean, right then I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. You know, this is just awesome. I thought it was the greatest thing.
You know, there's a week-long Apple II festival in Kansas called Kansas Fest every year. Have you ever gone to that?
No, I don't think I ever used an Apple II. Once I got the Atari and moved on, yeah, I don't think I ever used one after that.
Okay, I was just curious.
It's just a stepping stone.
All right, so when your Atari 800, did you have disk drive right away, or did you have to work with a cassette like I did initially, or what equipment did you have?
Let's see. Yeah, I had I had the disk drive right away. I never had to futz around with a cassette, because I remember someone else, a friend of mine, had the cassette, and I was like, wow, this just sucks. It just takes forever. So I didn't want to go that route. So my parents sprang for the disk drive and everything. So yeah,
cool.
that was That was pretty cool. And my next door neighbor, I got him into computers, and he got one as well, Atari 800, and so we could, share and learn off each other, and it was good times
That's
back
cool.
in high school.
Yep. So, how did you get into creating graphic printer utilities?
Well, let's see. I was, after I got the computer, at first it was, the games was a big attraction. Star Raiders and all that, Missile Command and all that good stuff. It's, fun. But I really enjoyed, just learning how the computer worked. And so I got into programming, mostly with BASIC and writing my own programs. And I got a printer, to do things like, with word processing, for school papers and things like that. Because, at that time, before I got the computer, when I did a something for school, you had to use a typewriter, which is, holy cow, was that just archaic? You make a mistake and then you can't hit backspace. You have to use whiteout. I mean, what a disaster. So yeah, I got that dot matrix printer, baby, and that was like the greatest thing ever, having a word processor. So anyway, back to your question, I was, as I learned to program more, I like to print out my programs, and I realized there was a big problem whenever your program had these, control characters in it,
The
which
ATASCII
was,
set,
from what I recall, yeah, that was really common to use those in your program, and the printer would just have a fit when you would try to print these things out. Because, back in those old days, when you printed out something, you just sort of sent, the character you sent, and A, the printer would interpret that exact character and print it out. Like today in Windows, it's all, graphics. It's sent it as like an image. But back in those days, you're just sending native characters. And so when you sent these ASCII whatever 175 for an underline or one of those corner rectangles, whatever, the printer would just go into fits and start doing page feeds or who knows what it would do, go into some weird mode, and it was just impossible to see your printer listing. So I was like, hey, this would be awesome if I could somehow, make it print. And I think I originally wrote a program that would just sort of parse my program and not send those special characters to the printer, so you could at least get the listing but not see those characters. So that sort of got me part way. And then I was like, well, hey, it would be super cool if I could actually see those special characters as well. And so that was sort of how Megafont began. I was working on that with a friend of mine, Richard, in high school, because he had the same problem. We were like, hey, so we worked together on that, and basically got it working,
That sounds pretty cool.
and I was really happy with it.
So was Megafont the first program that you wrote and sold commercially then?
Oh yeah, definitely. That's one of the the only ones really. That was probably, I think, 1983 came out with that, and this sort of ties in with this whole story with Excellent Software. Was back in those days, there was this company called Future Tech, and that was in Springfield, Virginia, and that was run by Mike and Linda Barnes. And it was sort of like a kind of like a small, very small Best Buy, well, way before Best Buy. It was all, they all had the latest technology, at least for 1983. So they would have computers, and they would have the latest audio video gear. And if you remember those laser disc players, those like 12-inch players, remember those things? Oh yeah, that was like the big thing back then. And so that was sort of like a hangout for me and some other people. We would just sort of hang out there on the weekends. And that was like the day of MTV, so they had this huge, like, 12-foot projection TV, and they would blast music videos, and we'd just hang out there. It was just just a place to hang out, sort of.
This sounds like a
So I
fun
made
place.
friends with the owners. Yeah, it was cool back in the day. And of course, all the technology was neat to see, different computers and whatnot. And I was friends with the owner Mike, and I told him about this program I'd written, and he was like, "Hey, maybe we could sell that." And I'm trying to think if he, I don't think Excellent Exhaust software existed back then, but pretty sure that was Megafont was their first sort of program. He got the idea of, hey, we could sell it through the store. And I think we sort of had some other people that were there that were interested in the programming, and they bought the product, and he was like, hey, we should make a business out of this, and advertise in the Atari magazines, and see if we can sell this. Other people, I'm sure, would find this useful. So he was the whole, he was a good salesman. So he basically ran the business, and it was just me and Richard. We were basically in college at that point, just started the first year of college, and yeah, so that was it. Megafont, first one, 1983. Yeah, I was probably 19, 19, 20. Yeah, right around that age.
That's pretty cool to have a success that early on in your career. Was Michael and Linda, was that a husband-wife team?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, husband and wife. They lived right in Springfield, Virginia.
So he was kind of the
And,
catalyst to generating or creating excellent software then.
exactly. Yep.
Okay.
I think he came up with a name for that. Yeah, he was a very good salesman, like I said before. He was a clever guy. Yeah, I haven't talked to him in years.
Okay. You mentioned Richard. Is that how do you pronounce the last name? Is it Rognally or Rognal? Is that the same person?
Yeah, Richard Rungley, I believe.
Okay.
Wrongly. That's yeah, a friend of mine from high school.
Okay, I saw him in one of the pictures from that. Okay.
Yeah, we're still like sort of like Facebook friends. I saw him a few years back.
Well, that's cool. So, did the company get very big, or did it maintain, just a few people, and that was it?
Oh yeah, it was a very small company. I mean, there was no office. He basically ran it out of his house. So there weren't really any full-time employees at all, because Mike ran the Futuretech business, and his wife helped him run, I think, Futuretech also, and the Excellent Software. So they
Right,
sort of
okay.
ran both of those. And then Richard and I, we were, I was living with my parents, going to college at that point. So I was mostly in school and just sort of part-time, playing around with computers on the when I had spare time, and working on Futuretech, or not, sorry, Megafont in my spare time. So it was basically just sort of a part-time gig for me, and they just sort of paid us royalties. It wasn't like a normal paycheck or a normal job or anything like that. It
Okay.
was just based on monthly sales, they would cut us a check. So, but that was, I mean, pretty cool at the time. It was like, hey, it's something like I would wanted to write this program anyway. I'm getting paid for it. So it was pretty awesome, really.
Do you know how many copies it sold?
I do not. I was looking. Yeah, I went to the basement a couple of days ago after you contacted me, and I found this box with my old Atari and a whole bunch of stuff, and I had a copy of Megafont 2 Plus that was serial number around 2500 on it, so at least 2500. But
Okay,
yeah, I
okay.
have no real idea how many they sold. I did have serial number 1 of Megafont for the PC version. I was like, ooh, collector's item. But yeah, I had like a whole excellent software suite of products fresh in the packaging. So that was kind of neat to see.
So you said that you didn't think that you really worked on anything else, but I saw that you had contributions to Page Designer and you had created the Koala Converter too.
Oh yeah, I did some just parts of those, and also the rubber stamp program we had. And I did a part of that as well, and it was all related to the printers, like sort of font creation, all kind of related type things. So just take these components that I'd already written and just integrate them into some of the other products. So when I recalled, I think they were all pretty much written in BASIC, so we could just use the reuse most of the same code pretty easily.
Did you compile it?
Yeah, pretty sure that was compiled. It's been a long time ago, I'm trying to remember, but it must have been compiled. I can't imagine the release source code. Yeah, no, there's no way. Yeah, it was compiled.
Yeah, because as you boot them
We did
without
some.
BASIC, so.
Yeah. Because I remember also writing in the Action language,
Yes, that's a good language.
while like playing around with that. Yeah, that was probably my favorite one on the 8-bit. But the Megafont, that was definitely written in BASIC, because at the time that was the only language I knew. That's what I learned on. So that was pretty much, but I enjoyed the Action. That was more advanced.
Besides
Pretty cool.
Action, were there any other languages that you learned or played with?
I don't think on the I'm trying to think on the 8-bit, not that I can remember, but when I had the got the Atari ST, I worked on Pascal on that, because I actually ported the Megafont to the ST as well.
Okay. Did you use the OSS Personal Pascal?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I had that package. I liked that a lot. Do
Yeah.
you remember how
Yeah,
long it took
that's pretty cool.
to actually develop Megafont? I mean, was it, did you sit down and, I'm gonna figure this out in a couple of weeks, or did it take you months, or?
Oh wow, that's a good question. Yeah, like I said, it was sort of in parts. I had like a basic version that was sort of to strip out the control codes to let me
Just grew over time.
see the program. Yeah, and it grew. But probably not that long. I mean, it's probably, yeah, on the order of month, less than a year for sure to write it. And that was sort of just part time. Because actually, I found a program listing of Megafont 2+ in that box in the basement, and
Oh, wow.
shockingly short. Yeah, I did not count the pages, but yeah, I'm guessing on the order of like 20 pages. It was a short program, when you consider what I work on today, much larger programs. So yeah, I
Right.
was shocked how short it was.
As their product suite diversified, did they come up with ideas for the new products, or did you guys kind of do that on your own and say, hey, we've kind of figured out how to do this and we want to introduce it as a product, or how did that work?
Well, actually, yeah, excellent software. They had some other programmers, again, that were sort of more like contractors,
It's like Len Dorfman and
like
Dennis Young.
me. Right, exactly. And they did those their other programs that got more into sort of like word processing and desktop publishing type things.
Right.
I wasn't really involved with that a whole lot. So, but they kind of, excellent, sort of specialize in the printer type area, and I'm not sure where they found those other guys, to be honest with you. But yeah, I wasn't really that much involved in, business decisions. I just wrote the Megafont and then helped them out with, when they're like, hey, they would say, hey, we've got this new product and it'll be cool to have font editing in it. Can you port that over for us? I did that for other platforms, and I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So
Okay, that's
something
cool.
like that.
So with all these graphic printer-oriented applications, did you guys ha spend a lot of time waiting on printouts while you were doing development, or did you have like any special tools or hardware that helped speed that up?
No, nothing. Nothing special. Trying to think here. Yeah, it was just your basic dot matrix printer, and it was pretty slow from what I remember. I think you could set the printer maybe to some, draft mode or something that would print a little bit faster, but yeah, nothing fancy. I remember Megafont had a mode that we added to it, sort of like this fast print mode where it would use like the native character set for faster printing, and then when it would get to like a control character, it would switch to like the graphics mode for the that part of it, and that would just slow it down because if you printed the whole thing in the graphics mode, it was a
Yeah,
lot slower.
right. What was Excellent's most successful product, do you recall?
Probably Megafont would be my guess. But yeah, you'd really have to ask Mike Barnes about that. Don't really, can't say for sure.
Yeah, okay, I just didn't know if
So
you
I'm not
might
really
know.
sure how popular, the other products. I'm not sure.
So one of the things that, when the Atari scene, that piracy was very rampant, and the first Excellent word processor was released without copy protection, as some of the other titles were as well. Did you guys have a problem with piracy, or how did you combat it if you did?
We definitely did. I recall we actually, I think the later versions of Megafon actually had copy protection built in. I don't recall who did this, but I think we had purchased some manufacturer that makes these disk. God, I can't remember the details, but there was something about it would the disk would be have like a bad sector or something like that, and then the code would try to read that sector, and then it would make sure it would get an error. So if you had copied the disk and it didn't have the bad sector, then it would you could tell a legitimate copy. So pretty sure we did add that to at least Megafont and maybe some of our other products toward the end there.
Right. Okay.
It's definitely piracy was a problem.
All right.
But yeah, that's still today, and you'll never get rid of that.
You mentioned that you ported some stuff over to the Atari ST, and also that, I know there was a PC version of some of the products. Did you have parts in those? And well, obviously you had parts in some of the points that you mentioned porting over, but what about on the PC side?
Yeah, let's see. I believe Richard did most of the work on the PC side. I think that was written in Turbo Pascal, if I'm not mistaken. I think I did some of the work on that. I can vaguely recall maybe working with some of it, but I think he did most of that. And then the ST, I'm pretty sure I did all of that. The ST port, which went pretty quickly from what I recall. That was just like maybe a couple of weeks or something. I had the whole program ported.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
Because yeah, once you have, yeah, I mean, once you have a complete program that's not that big to begin with, honestly, it's not that hard to port. Just coming up with it is what takes the longest time, because then you got to solve all the problems and generate all the logic, but just
Right.
to copy it's pretty easy.
This might be a question for Michael, but do you happen to remember which platform was the most successful for Excellent?
Yeah, I'll
Probably Atari, but I don't know
probably
that one.
say the 8-bit, yeah, the 8-bit Atari, it's got to be, because that was when they were the most successful, was the 8-bit days. Because once I got into the PC, mean, I don't, Come didn't last that much longer after the PC days, honestly. So it, even the STU, I think it was probably starting to wind down. So yeah, definitely the 8-bit days.
All right. What was the reason, or what led to the demise of Excellent Software? Just declining sales, or was there something else that contributed?
Probably just competition and just a move to, more advanced operating systems. Once we, Microsoft came out with, Microsoft Word and all this kind of stuff and Windows, that was just so much more powerful than what we had back in the day. It was pretty primitive.
Right, so just kind of
So, they had
replaced
all
it.
this. Yeah, there was desktop publishing. Yeah, there was something Broderbund. I can't remember, print shop or something like that that came out. Yeah, just did a lot more than our product did. And yeah, then once the PC got more popular, we couldn't compete with big companies with a bunch of developers, with we
Right.
just had a couple
Right.
part-time guys,
Do you have any funny stories about working there?
Funny stories.
Or interesting?
I can remember. Yeah, Mike and Linda, they lived in this house, and I would go over there. We're all friends. They were maybe 10 years older than me, something like that, and they rented a room out to this girl Jennifer, and then she became my girlfriend. So yeah, I would hang out there like all the time. So it was kind of like a family. And so we would just do a lot of things together. And I can remember one time when we got this shrink wrap machine and they needed, copies of like Megafont and other excellent products to be shrink wrapped. And I was like, oh, okay, I was like, okay, I can do that. And I was like, well, how much are you going to pay me? So instead of paying me hourly, he thought, oh, I'll just pay you like 50 cents per box that you shrink wrap. So he showed me how to do it. It didn't take that long to shrink wrap a box. I was like, okay. And then, as I started doing it, I got faster and faster. So I worked on this thing for just like an hour or two. And I just started cranking them out like an unbelievable rate, So I went through like, I don't know, 200 of them or something. I was making like, $100 an hour or something back in the 1980s, He was like, okay, wait, I think we need to reevaluate how we pay you. So yeah, I think we just went back to hourly at that point. But that was kind of funny. I was like, hey, wow, I'm making more money doing shrink wrapping than writing software. This is where
There you go.
it's
So
at.
was Jennifer, is that the did she end up, was she the one that was doing the art for Excellent? Is that Jennifer
Ah,
Brabson?
yeah, exactly.
Okay, all
Jennifer
right.
Brabson. Yep. Exactly. Same one. So she was an excellent artist. So yeah, she did all the artwork for pretty much most of the products and like sample graphics and whatnot for that she did on that koala pad thing. And I was always amazed with her talent. She could just sit down and just draw something. I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Well, that's
Yeah.
cool.
I have a cup right in front of me now. I don't remember if I sent you a picture of this. I don't think I did. It's like a coffee cup that she made for me in 19, wow, 87 or something. I don't know. Anyway, it's got a drawing of a printer, and it's got a cat that's behind the printer, and the dot matrix page is coming printing out and going over the cat, and the
Does it say
page says
meow?
meow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says meow.
I didn't see the
It's
mug, but I've
cute.
seen the printout, or I've seen the that artwork.
Yep, so I still have that. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. So what did you do after you left Excellent Software?
Let's see. I Yeah, I graduated college in 1987, and then I started working for this company named Invipco, and unbelievably, I still work for them to this day.
Wow.
And yeah, so basically got a programming entry level programming job there. Started out with, geez, believe it or not, I was programming an assembly language.
Oh, wow.
And we made some equipment, basically states that have deposit laws on your bottles and cans.
Oh, okay.
We make this machine. It looks like a vending machine, but it's called a reverse vending machine. So basically, consumer brings back their empty bottles and cans and puts them in the machine, and they get paid. They get their deposit, their nickel deposit back. And a lot of the states in the Northeast, like Connecticut, where I am, New York, they have these deposit laws. So anyway, so it was writing software that actually runs these machinery. And it was kind of funny because in the old days, we actually had coin hoppers in these machines, and they'd actually vend actual coins to the consumer. And then as years went by, someone requested printers. So we got into these thermal printers that are just, everywhere now, at Walmart or wherever you
Right.
go, everyone has a thermal printer. And but that was kind of a new technology back then. So yeah, we had thermal printers to our machines. And of course, I wrote all the code to do the printing, and it was amazingly similar to a lot of the work I had done, in Megafont and whatnot.
Oh, that's
Because a lot
cool.
of it was involved with, yeah, doing these custom characters that did print out things like that. When we started doing foreign markets, we had to, we may not have the euro symbol in the printer font, so I had to do like the graphics conversion. A lot of the same kind of stuff, font design, and all that. So it's basically been working on that kind of thing for the last 30 years, but just migrating it to different, technologies, as we upgrade our equipment. We went through sort of a PC-based phase, and started out with an embedded system, and then PC-based, and now it's all pretty much Linux, C++, Linux, Qt runs the whole thing with internet connectivity, and it's all. It has a video monitor for the customer that can show advertisements and, connect to the web and all this stuff. It's just amazing how the complexity of these things has grown over the years. But yeah, still to this day, I write the printer, all the printer code, and I got to write a bunch of programs that, unfortunately, we don't sell these type programs, but more for in-house and for other customers that would buy our machines. An example would be like a coupon designer program that I wrote that lets you lay out graphics and text on the screen, and then basically it'll convert it to a format that the printer can understand. So it's a lot of same things that I've worked on since day one. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's cool. All right. When I initially contacted you, it didn't sound like you knew that there was an active community of Atari enthusiasts. Have you heard of the Atari Age forums?
I had maybe briefly heard of it. I've never really gone on there, and I was kind of just amazed that people still, they're still interested in this old technology. It's just so ancient compared to the new stuff. So that was pretty interesting, and you brought that to my attention. I checked it out a little bit. I was just
Yeah, there's people still making software for it, and actually even new hardware. There's a project underway now that one guy has created called the 1088 XEL, which he's completely redesigned the, I guess, the motherboard for the 8-bit computer, and made accommodations for all the modern upgrades for, you know, from different vendors, so that this thing, when you build it, it's like the Mac Daddy Atari, and it's designed to fit in a micro ITX case.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh man, no, that's a diehard Atari fan for you.
Yeah, so you got your 130XE you said you still had, and you got it out and you were playing with it.
Yeah, I fired that puppy up first time in probably, I don't know, 30 years maybe. Almost 30 years the other day. So that was pretty exciting to see that blue screen just instantly pop up. I mean, there was no booting windows. Right. It was just instant on. That was great.
Yeah, I keep a 130XE on my desk.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Wow, how often do you use it?
I use it when I'm doing podcast research. I'll, you know, fire the programs up on there. I do a lot of it on the emulator, but then I'll also load them up on real hardware just to see if there's any, you know, like what the true colors look like, and sometimes, you know, how they really run on real hardware. And then we play a lot of games on them.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, when I fired mine up, I plugged in a couple of cartridges with the games on it, and yeah, I think there's something wrong with mine. I couldn't get the sound to work at all. The video, I don't know if it's just some, might just be the connectors maybe need to be cleaned or something, but it's, there were like areas on the screen that just seemed to be glitchy, you know? Like if you just fired up with the basic cartridge, instead of having a blank screen, you would have, you know, sort of like the letter X, maybe 8 of them on the screen at sort of random locations. And if you would type into it, it would, the X would go away. And but if you backspace, it would come back. So I'm not sure. It's like a memory problem. Or
probably. A lot of those, I think the 130XE had a lot of memory issues with the chips going bad.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, it hasn't been used in a long time. So I was a little surprised. I figured it would just work perfectly or not at all. But somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, I still have my original Atari 800 that I bought back in, gosh, had to be 81, I can't remember exactly when, but it was, it's had a new shell, or not a new shell, a new motherboard put in it at one point, and now this motherboard's got something wrong with the GTIA or CTIA chip in it, and it, one of the players, when you get four players on the screen, one of them is always full width. So he blocks out everything that you can see. So,
oops. Oh, that's cool. You still have your 800. I wish I still had my original 800. I think I must have sold that on somewhere back, probably when I got the XE. I don't remember what happened to it, but
yeah,
that was my first computer. I should have kept that. Wish I had it.
Did you go through an evolution of Ataris before you ended up with the XE? Did you go like to the XL and then the XE, or did you just go straight from 800 to the XE?
I think I went straight from an 800 to an XE. Yeah, I don't think I had any of the XLs, from what I recall. Yeah. What about you?
I had the 800 XL after the 800, and then I got the XE after that. The 800 XL is probably my favorite one of all of them. The keyboard was the best and had the best compromise, you know, with the extra memory and stuff. And I had done I can't remember what it was called. There was some mod I did to it that gave it more memory and also had a hotkey debugger that you could pop into and see, you know, stop the program that's running in memory. I think it was called like Ramrod or something like that. I can't remember. It's been so long. But it's a little switch that you could turn it on and off. It also made the ROM compatible with the 800 so that you didn't have to use the translator disk.
Cool. Yeah, I remember I had some. Yeah, you probably remember the name of it. There was some disk drive modification that would make it faster.
Might have been Happy,
I
maybe.
don't. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Of course, I think that lets you copy disk also, but it sped up the disk writes from what I recall.
Yeah, I've got one of the well, a clone of the Happy in my 1050 here. I got two 1050s, but one of them has the Happy clone in it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I do have one of the disk drives. I didn't fire it up the other day. I just fired up the cartridges, but yeah, I wonder if that disk drive still works. That'll be interesting.
So, which ST did you get initially? Did you get 520, or did you was you was it late enough that you got an ST that you got a 1040?
Oh, geez. I think it was a 520. Yeah.
All right, that's the one I
Yeah, I
started out
don't
with
have that
too.
one anymore. Yeah. Can't remember what I did with that. No idea where that went. Probably sold it on eBay or something a long time ago. No idea.
You sent me some pictures of some of the things that you had in that, bo that box of stuff, and there's one thing in particular that caught my eye in that picture, and there's a brochure of the 1450 XLD, and it's not the Atari,
Oh, yeah.
not the whole Atari, the magazine that had the 1450, or I don't know, catalog, I guess, not magazine. It's not the catalog that had it in the back, but it's actually a dedicated brochure. And I don't think I have ever seen that. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that. So I think you have a rare item there. And I would love to
Oh,
have
really?
it
Interesting.
scanned so I could see it in detail.
Yeah, I actually have it right here in front of me. It's I think I got that at some trade show somewhere. Who knows where, but yeah, they never produced that unit, right?
Right, yeah.
This was vaporware.
The golden unicorn.
So yeah. So yeah, it's in pretty good shape. Yeah, copyright 1983 on the back. Yeah, I can take some nice pictures of it with I don't have a scanner, but I have a nice DSLR. I can give you some high-res photos of it.
Right, would you be interested in having me scan it at all? If you want to archive any of that stuff, I can scan it for you and help with any of that.
Yeah, we have. Actually, I think I have a scanner at work, but I'll try to take some pictures of it. It should come out pretty nice.
Okay.
And we can go from there and see what you think of it.
All right, that sounds
Yeah, I
good.
had a couple of different brochures and whatnot. But oh yeah, here they are. Yeah, blast from the past.
Yeah, you also mentioned that you had the if you had found the source code for Megafont too. Would you be interested in having that archived off at all?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. Actually, I just found it here.
There's a lot of programmers that have been interviewed by like the Antic podcast and stuff. They've basically allowed their the source code where they found it to be scanned and uploaded to the Internet Archive for, you know, preservation of the software, because you know a lot of these disks that these things are on are suffering from bit rot, and they're starting to, you know, the oxide's coming off of them, so you can't read them anymore, and it'd be a shame to lose some of that stuff.
I have to look. Would you want a scan or? Because I don't know if I can get this into some digital format, but I definitely have a hard copy here on dot matrix paper
Oh wow.
with the edges here with the holes even. Just yeah, it's pretty humorous.
Well, yeah, I mean
Yeah, I might.
if you're willing to do that, I mean any way that you can generate is fine.
Yeah, I probably need to ask Richard since he was helped out on this
No
as
problem.
well. I'm sure he would have no problem with that. But yeah, it's only actually let me count here. Yeah, it's like 10 pages long. It's ridiculously short. If this is the whole thing,
And if you're not interested or you're not comfortable doing it, that's fine too. I just thought it'd be something unique to offer to the Atari community, so that software doesn't disappear. All right.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's already disappeared. That's funny.
What do you like to do outside of work?
Well, actually, I've always just like nature, just going to national parks, things like that, hiking. It's one of my favorite things, just go to a park with a nice view, and that's awesome. I really got into photography back when digital cameras came out. That just was just awesome for me, just the marriage of photography and computers. It's fantastic. So really got into photography. I've got all this DSLR gear, like a whole backpack of lenses, so I go on vacation, I'm always just taking lots of pictures. So actually, if you go to my website, randydellinger.com, you can see a lot of my work there. That's pretty much all photography, basically,
Do you sell any of those
on
prints?
there. A little bit, not much, honestly, mostly just for fun.
Okay.
Sold a few, I shot a few weddings professionally, but that turned out not to be really my thing. Just sort of more like just helping people out.
Right.
That basically people that couldn't really afford maybe to hire a real professional photographer. So I just shot at weddings for a few people that just for a low price, basically, just to help them out.
Right, yeah. That's understandable.
But yeah, that ends up being, yeah, kind of stressful. It's a stressful profession, really. It's a lot more work than you think. It's a lot of editing. It's a lot more editing than it is taking the pictures during the wedding.
Right.
So it's a lot of time in front of the computer, and a lot of time. But yeah, I like pictures, photography, outdoors, and I was always into sports cars. Go for a nice drive,
There you go.
things like that. But yeah, I always like keep up with technology, the latest cell phones and whatnot. I think the cell phones are just incredible technology.
Never could have imagined it.
Yeah, I know. I even imagined that kind of thing, back when I was in high school, thinking like, wow, it would be awesome to have some type of, like digital map that could tell you how to get somewhere, thinking of like GPS, but I never imagined that everyone would have it in their pocket today. I mean, geez, yeah, I mean, you're back in the old day when you actually would get lost and had no idea where you were. It's like impossible to get lost now. It's like, oh, I just look at your phone and it tells you where you are.
Yep, turn
I just
left
call
here.
someone. Yeah.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, I just love all the amazing technology and the phones with just the cameras and the internet. Just wow. Just incredible what you can do in your phone,
All right. I think that about wraps up my questions, and I do appreciate your time again. I want to thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Wait.
All right. Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't ask?
I don't know. I think we covered most of it. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff I forgot, but yeah, that's all the basics.
All right. Anything you'd like to pass on to the active Atari community?
Wow. That I didn't even know existed. Wow, that's just pretty amazing that you guys are still out there using these old machines. So, party on.
Yeah, they can't be hacked, right?
Pretty cool.
All right.
Yeah, you sort of inspired me. Maybe I should fire this up and use it
Yeah,
some.
That's right. Go play some games.
Yeah. Let's see how it compares to my Xbox One.
Yeah. Well, our Call of Duty looked like two tanks on a flat screen, so.
Yeah, that's kind of funny when you got your I hooked the Atari up to my, like, whatever, 60-inch screen, and it's like, wow, this is pretty blocky.
Yeah.
But it brings back some memories, you know? Pac-Man on this giant screen, like, it doesn't look half bad.
Yep. All right, I appreciate your time. I want to thank you again. And maybe if you come up with anything that you want to pass on or find anything else that you think I might be interested, just let me know. And if I come up with any more questions, I'll reach out to you.
Sure, sounds good, Wade, and I'll get you this 1450 XLD brochure scanned in for you.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
All righty.
Have a good afternoon. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All righty. All
right, bye.
Special thanks.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for continuing to listen to this podcast and support my endeavor. And I have to thank WizWars for releasing the excellent tune 8-Bit Raceway, which I include as part of the show music. Thanks again, everyone.
Contact information.
You can email me, Wade, with wade@inversetaski.info or inversetaski@icloud.com, or you can use the contact form on the Inversetaski website, which happens to be inversetaski.info. You can find Inversetaski on Twitter with @Inversetaski, and you can find Inversetaski on Facebook with facebook.com/Inversetaski. You can also find Inversetaski on iTunes and at some point Google Play.
What? I did not get a chance to speak this episode. Goodbye.